Blog Talk Radio.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello, welcome to episode 2 of Next Fan Up, the NFL talk show that is by the fans, for the fans. I am your host and super fan of the Cincinnati Bengals, Simon Hunter, aka English Simon. Following on from our free agency madness debut edition that was hosted by Pod Vader, episode 2 will focus solely on the current state of the AFC North, quite possibly the best division in football, after selling not one, but three teams to the playoffs last season. I'll introduce the fans in a minute, but over the next hour or so, we'll take a look at each team's effort during free agency and the offseason in general so far, and discuss team needs ahead of the draft next month. As I mentioned, this show is by the fans, for the fans, so please do get in touch as we would love to hear from you. We want to make this show as fan-friendly as possible. So how do you do that? Well, you can tweet us at NFU Podcast. You can send us an email to the address nextfanup@gmail.com. And you can like us on Facebook at NFU Podcast. It's time to speak to our AFC North superfans. So first, we must start with the current division champions, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and their fan, Greg Faltanovich, a man so in love with all things AFC North that he even moved to Ohio. Greg, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Simon. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no, well, we're all hosts here, Greg. I'm just the main man. Oh. Next up, he once professed to being king of the superfans, but now he is king of technology after a quite staggering change from laggard to leader in just the last month alone. He is a superfan of the Baltimore Ravens, our very own sexy Rexy. He is Rex Fisher. Rex, how are you, sir?
Sir, you're Sir Simon, and sexy Rexy, I mean, that was my stage name when I performed in the 80s. Were you one of my customers?
I was born in the 80s, so no, but after this podcast, I may be, Rex. Let's see how it goes. And then finally, and by all means least, well, his team anyway, our long-suffering super fan of the Cleveland Browns and part-time soccer coach, Rob Collar. Rob, how are you, my friend?
Suffering, still, the Cleveland Browns.
It may go on for a few more years just yet. Anyway, let's kick off things by going around the team needs and also the biggest moves we've all made so far. Let's start with Greg and the Steelers first. Greg, what is the biggest move the Steelers have made during the offseason so far?
I think the biggest move is the obvious one, signing Big Ben to his extension. I mean, everyone knew it was coming. They made him the second highest paid quarterback in the league. And now the team can really just move forward with their salary cap and maybe sign a couple free agents. I mean, other than D'Angelo Williams, they haven't done anything in free agency yet. So hopefully they will find some guys now that Big Ben's wrapped up for the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge move. And I think one that obviously had to be done ahead of time, given the cap ramifications for the team. But I think it just really strengthens the fact that, you know, you're probably the team that goes into next season as the favorites, because apart from a couple of guys, I guess, corner and linebacker, you're quite much intact, so it's quite a good position for you to be in, and very scary for all our teams. Rex and Rob, what do you reckon is to the Ben news, and also any other sort of Steelers-related news you think is quite significant so far?
Well, I think that the signing of Ben is very smart by the Steelers. Just as a fan of one of the other teams in the division, I'm hoping that locks up their salary cap for a while. And you know, doesn't allow them to sign any other big name free agents.
Well, what it means for me is that now, for the next, like you said, 3 to 5 years, we have to deal with the division's drama queen. Now, Greg, don't get upset here, because as far as quarterbacks go, I rank him number 3 in the NFL. I would take Rodgers, Brady are the only two quarterbacks I'd take before him. But as far as Ben being drama queen, we all know he is. I mean, he is one of the toughest quarterbacks in the NFL. And he plays through every injury. But when he plays through an injury, he makes sure everyone knows he's playing through that injury.
He makes sure he gets his credit for playing through injuries, that's for sure. But, I mean, they had no choice in the move. They had to keep him happy. So, it's kind of boring and obvious, but it is what it is.
Yeah, definitely. Do you just thinking about Rex's point about him being a bit of a drama queen? Sorry to upset any females out there, but do you think this may change the dynamic in him, his relationship with the offensive coordinator Todd Haley? Because they've kind of been sort of going head to head for a couple of years. Last year was obviously the year it came together, but do you think maybe that Ben will try and get his own way now? He's kind of like he's locked in and he's kind of the big cheese, so to speak.
I think really. They resolved that already because there was a lot of hoopla about him calling the no huddle plays, I think it was last year or the year before, and giving Ben all the credit for being the genius behind, you know, keeping the team fast paced and moving through their plays. And Haley took the back seat by letting Ben take all the credit for the no huddle and all that. So, I mean, they kind of fed into Ben's ego the whole time just to keep him happy. So I think as long as Haley's willing to do that, they have no problem.
Yeah, I think it's all about, I think, making sure there's communication between the two, but also making sure that I think everyone kind of gets their way in some regard. But I think one of the other moves that I think is interesting, and it's not really a move per se, but Keith Butler, obviously the new defensive coordinator, how do you see that impacting the team going forward? Because obviously LeBeau is a great coordinator, but I think maybe he was becoming a bit stale in the way that he did things, and maybe it's a new chance for a new start for the defense.
Absolutely, and the only thing they know for sure is that they're going to keep the base 3-4, but there's some rumors that they might go to something more like what Baltimore runs with that hybrid front. And I mean, they're still going to need their pass rushers, but no one really knows what value, you know, Butler has on cornerbacks or, you know, even what he values, you know, his middle linebackers to be doing or whatnot. So it's really a year of transition, and we'll see what happens. I mean, Butler has a lot to build on. He has nothing to work with right now on defense, so he's got to build it the way he wants it. But I think we're going to go the way of Baltimore with the multiple fronts.
Yeah, which is obviously a good way to go. Right, okay, let's move on to the Ravens then, Rex. I guess, as always, with your team, it's like a lot of players went out, not many came in. But I guess what's been the biggest move so far, and is it quite literally a big move?
Well, obviously the biggest move the Ravens have made so far was trading Haloti Ngata to Detroit for a fifth and a sixth.
And it was a fourth and a fifth.
Fourth and a fifth, and we also gave up a seventh. Haloti Ngata was a great, well-liked player, great in the locker room, great in the community, but the man is 31 years old. The last time he played all 16 games was 2011. He always seemed to be banged up as the season went on, which is to be expected for a guy that his size and plays his position. And he was unwilling to restructure his contract. He wanted an extension, and the Ravens aren't in the business of extending people who they think are on the downside of their career, unless he's a Ray Lewis. So that's the biggest move, and I think it was the right one.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree because I think if you look at the guys that they've replaced over the last couple of years, obviously Brandon Williams has been really good. I think Timmy Jernigan last year, somebody I really liked coming out of the draft and did really well when he was in there. So it seems like I always think that you guys are always probably two steps ahead of where the players think you are. And I think obviously you'll have a plan as well. And again, we'll talk about the draft in a bit, but there's a lot of picks that you'll likely have after last year's losses. So yeah, I think you guys will move on. Rob, what do you reckon to the Ravens so far in the offseason? Anything that's sort of caught your eye as a potential issue or, you know, a good move that they've made?
Well, I mean, I think in terms of the Haloti move, I think that's a great move by them. I mean, they're, like you said, two steps ahead all the time. They didn't see any dip in their defense when he was out. I think the biggest move that happened actually is losing Torrey Smith. I mean, he's a deep threat that they might be able to replace in the draft, but, you know, he brings in a lot of yardage that doesn't show up on the stat sheet in terms of pass interference. You know, Joe Flacco's got that deep ball that they throw, and 50% of the time they get a PI call. They move that ball way, way down the field. And that was one of the keys, I think, to them, their last Super Bowl run.
Yeah, very true. Greg, have you got anything to add on there? I think from a pass perspective, obviously Torrey Smith was number two on the team, I think, and obviously Owen Daniels as well, who's gone to Denver, he was number three on the team. So there's a hole there, and I don't think there's much in the way of replacement so far, but I think it is a good draft for receivers again, so maybe potentially a move there.
Well, you know, I would like to go back to, like, Nada for a second, because I'm just interested with the Ravens. They're kind of going through a transition there. You know, in recent years, they've lost Lewis, Reed, now Nada, and then Canty. And I'm just wondering if there's going to be, like, a leadership vacuum there on the defense.
Greg, I don't know if you saw it. Chris Canty just re-signed 2 years with us.
Oh, wow. Good.
That's why Rex is here. I like that, Rex. Good interjection there. We've got a new two-year deal. I didn't know that was the case as well, so I appreciate that. But I think when you've got Suggs there as well, Dumaville had a great year last year, and they'll probably address that early on in the draft. I think they might be okay. Well, obviously, it's a big miss, but I think they'll move on. Anyway, let's move on to Rob, your team. It's been a really weird off-season so far. A couple of moves. You've brought some guys on in defense in the last couple of days. Talk about sort of the biggest move that you've seen so far for your team.
Yeah, I mean, in Cleveland, it's always a weird offseason. We always try and win the offseason, but it never works. I think the biggest move is adding Tre'Mon Williams from the Packers. I think that the contract was a little bit larger than they would have liked, but, you know, you've got to pay a premium to get people to come into Cleveland because of their losing ways. The interesting thing for them is it gives them a solid number two. I mean, Buster Screen last year was okay, but I think that this is an upgrade, and this is definitely the best unit that they have on the field, whether it be offense or defense, is their defensive backs. It really, I think, shows more what they think about Justin Gilbert, and that draft was a bust. You know, they didn't have faith in bringing him in back and as the starter, and so they signed Tre'Mon Williams. It's frustrating to see how many, you know, first-round picks they have that are busts. It's almost like they're just throwing darts at a board when they do their draft.
Yeah, I mean, last year was just a strange draft. I mean, I'm not sure there was many people who thought that Gilbert was number one in terms of the cornerbacks. You know, a very good physical specimen, but maybe not somebody who was a gamer per se. And then obviously, we'll talk about Manziel in a bit, but I still don't know how they made that pick and didn't go with Bridgewater in the end. But hey ho, another two picks this year. We'll discuss the draft in a bit, but I look at the defense as well, and you lose Sheard. You know, I think it's been a really nice player for you guys. I think up the middle is kind of an issue. Ruben's probably not going to come back. There's potentially more holes there, but obviously Randy Starks came in. But again, these 31, 32 year olds, you know, you can't really build a team for the long term around these guys. So I think when we talk about the draft, let's talk about maybe some new legs on defense. For sure.
Yeah, and it seems like the guys that they bring in are backups on other people's team, you know, so it's kind of a lot of the same.
Yeah, so Rex, have you got anything to add on the Browns so far?
Well, yeah, Rob, I had a question for you. Judging by what you've said here and everything, picking up with Tre'Mon Williams, it seems to me like you and maybe some other Cleveland Brown fans have given up on Justin Gilbert. Don't you think it might be too soon to do that? I look at the Ravens' own Jimmy Smith. After his first 2 years, we thought that he was going to be a bust. And up until he got injured last year, I think he was playing like one of the top three or four corners in the league. He was a rookie last year. I mean, do you expect them to still give him a chance? Is he going to be playing nickel corner for you guys? What?
Yeah, I think that's the key there. I think that they'll give him a chance in nickel corner. The weird thing about Gilbert is that there's all these, you know, issues coming out from the front office that they are stating that they didn't know before the draft, and nobody can really figure out what those are, but it's something in his personal life that is not up to par. And so I'm wondering if that hurt him as well. You know, and then with Jimmy Smith, you saw some glimpses of an NFL player there with Justin Gilbert. I mean, I think they had him rated as the third worst DB in the NFL last year. And I just don't see him being able to step up. But I think they're going to have to throw him in at the nickel package.
Okay. That was my only question. I was shocked when they signed Tre'Mon Williams, because me, I hate it when my Ravens give up on a fifth round pick, much less the first round pick.
Yeah, you guys are so much better at your draft, though. I mean, it's almost laughable what the Browns are able to do with their first-round pick.
Oh, that's crazy. Greg, have you got anything to add on the Browns so far?
Well, I guess I'm just really wondering. So is it purely just mental is that the perception with Gilbert? That
yeah.
Like he's either like homesick or not stable or something? Or
That's what they're saying. I mean, the rumor around is that, yeah, he's really, really homesick, and that he did well in college because he lives close to his parents, and that he just doesn't, he hasn't been able to pick up the speed, and he just doesn't give the effort that they thought he would, you know, as a first round pick and such a high draft pick.
Well, at least maybe he can mature out of that then.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we hope.
It just boggles my mind that these guys come in, and especially a first round pick in particular, where, you know, you probably know about the fact that they're a home, you know, home bird. Why haven't they moved his family there? Why haven't they done everything they can to help him,
you know,
acclimatize?
The Browns are, you know, it's the factory of sadness. That's what they call it. I mean, their ineptitude is almost laughable. The, you know, I mean, they come out with quotes from the owner saying that they had no idea about Johnny Manziel's backstory, when everybody, I mean, I don't even live in Cleveland. I don't even live near Texas A&M, but you know what, that Johnny Manziel's been out partying every single day. He tweets about it. It's on Instagram. I mean, I don't know what, they should just fire all their scouts, I'm guessing. I mean, I don't know what they do in terms of their research, but it's laughable.
Yeah, you must cry at night sometimes, Robbie. You really must, because
it's born under
to not know time. About to not know about Johnny Manziel is like being on the moon for a long time and just not knowing what's going on in the world. That is just crazy. But hey, that's you always make it more enjoyable to be a Bengals fan. When people call us like cheap and stuff like that, I'm like, yeah, I'd rather be a Bengals fan than a Browns fan any day of the week. So
that is true.
Speaking of the Bengals, I'm gonna just drop a little.
But we're on to Cincinnati.
Yes, we are, Bill. We are on to Cincinnati. Let's talk about the moves that my team have made. In terms of new faces, only one real one, which is AJ Hawk, came over from the Green Bay Packers, and also defensive end Michael Johnson. In a strange sort of turn of events, where he gets signed to a big deal, 5-year deal in Tampa last year. You know, plays hurt last year, didn't do too well, and then gets cut, but still gets paid. I believe it's $7 million just not to be in Tampa, which would be very nice if you can get it. So he comes back to Cincinnati. I think it's a 4-year deal, which pays him around $24 million. So I think Michael's feeling pretty good about himself right now, back home and also getting paid quite well. We've also brought back Ray Mauluga, Clint Bowling, Mike Nugent and Eric Winston. And I think it's just a sign of the times, really, where people want to stay with the Bengals, which I guess, you know, from the 90s and the early 2000s was never the case. So it's been really encouraging to see the fact that, you know, we've kept a lot of our own players. The AJ Hawk one's interesting for me because last year we were pretty thin at linebacker, but this year, obviously re-signing Mauluga and bringing in AJ Hawk, I think it's insurance for Vontaze Burfict, who has a knee injury, a microfracture on the knee, which apparently is not nice, but, you know, we hope he comes back. But after last year's kind of thinness, if that's the right word, I think we've done a really good job so far of addressing that need. And obviously signing somebody like Bowling, who's done well for us, is encouraging. So I wonder if you guys got anything to sort of say about the Bengals' moves so far.
Well, I'd like to add, I mean, where do you think Hawk fits in there? He obviously plays better on the inside. You guys run a traditional 4-3 defense, and you do have Burfict and Mauluga there. So where do you think Hawk will fit in?
Yeah, it's a good question. I have a theory that I'm not sure has been tested out yet, but remember when we brought in James Harrison? Well, the reason we brought him in was not because he was a great scheme fit, but because he played with a tenacity and a nastiness that we didn't really have amongst the young team. And I think with AJ Hawk, we have a lot of young players. So, you know, beyond Vontaze, beyond Mauluga, we have 3 or 4 guys, Marquise Flowers, Sean Porter, also, what's your name? Jason DeMunch as well, sorry. So I think it's a bit of both. We need the depth, but also this guy can show these young players how to develop. And I think last year we were probably a little bit unhappy with the development of those guys. So I think it's maybe as a substitute or early sort of rundowns, but also as a mentor to these young players. And then go ahead, Rob.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that AJ Hawk's a nice signing for you guys. I mean, at the minimum, it gives you some depth, you know. I mean, with linebackers, you can never have too many in my book. I think that, you know, as you're trying to, the key to the middle of your defense, and as, you know, injuries happen, you guys, things go down, and it just helps there.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, I think that there must be some concern with Burfict, because you know you don't overaddress the situation. We have a lot of money now invested in linebackers, so it's clearly just making sure that we can open up the draft, you know, as much as we can, and also just make sure we've got our depth as we go into training camp and the OTAs and whatnot. So yeah, it's quite exciting. But part two of this roundtable, I guess, is addressing the strangest move by the team so far. And I'm going to sort of stay with the Bengals for the time being, if that's okay. But I thought the strange thing about the re-signing of Ray Maluga was the cap hit that it meant. So Ray Maluga is essentially a two-down linebacker, and the cap hit for him this year is $7.1 million, which to me just sounds crazy for a guy who, yes, has made us, you know, a better team when he's played, but he's not been fully fit for, I think it's three seasons, similar to Haloti Ngata in that regard. And I just don't get why somebody who probably doesn't have a large market out there would come back on such a big number. So for me, that's my kind of move that I think I don't quite get. But still, it's nice that I guess we have the insurance there. Do you guys have anything from the Bengals' perspective that you think is the strangest move so far?
Well, if I could add something to that, and I don't know, I'm not looking at overthecap.com or anything like that. Maluga's cap hit this year, as you said, $7.1 million. What is his cap hit in years after that? Because if I'm not mistaken, the Bengals were one of the teams with the most cap room, and they have to spend a certain amount. So maybe they structure, and I'm just saying possibly, maybe they possibly structured his contract in such a way that most of the cap hit comes this year when they have all this space under the cap.
I think that is the case. That is absolutely the case. So basically we could cut him next season with no real major hit on the cap. I think it's one of those situations where they may have gone, yeah, we'd like to make sure we get him back this year. We've got the space, like to your point. I think we came into the offseason with about $24 million in cap space. So I think, yeah, I think it's they've said, let's front load the contract in that regard and make sure that, listen, if he doesn't play well this year, we can let him go. But it still seems to me like, you know, we could have not made that deal and been in the market for Nick Fairley or Greg Hardy. Listen, I don't think they're the sort of guys we're after these days, but, you know, I think the smartest teams in the NFL, like Seattle, like Baltimore, don't always put everything in certain players. They hold a bit back to make these sort of smart week two free agency moves. And we've kind of not been able to do that now because we've put so much in Maluga.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that is because, and I don't know this for a fact, but is he one of the leaders on the defense? I mean, I know coming out of USC, he was one of those, you know, four great linebackers, and he was the leader of those four, and that included Matthews and, you know, Brian Cushing and I forget the other guy, but anyway, they had four really, really good linebackers. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure how closely you follow our games, but I always think of Ray Maluga. I think he's 28 years old, so he's getting on there. It always still looks to me like he's quite immature and doesn't quite understand the big occasion, which is quite strange, yeah, because he came out of USC where the light is always shining on them. But he's kind of come in, he's quite immature, he's quite, you know, silly. I don't think he's a leader in as much as, you know, he's the Ray Lewis type. But I do think he does obviously have a role within the team, and a lot of people do like him. So, yes, I think to an extent. And the Bengals just like to keep their own and like to make sure that they're basically, you know, keeping that core together because of so many years of upheaval. And we have done well to an extent, four playoffs in a row. They're kind of trying to keep the band together for one last push because Marvin Lewis's contract's up at the end of the year. Next year we can cut Dalton with no cap hit. So I think maybe they were like, listen, let's give it a go one more year and we'll go from there. But I guess moving on to you, I think,
yeah,
Rob,
Simon.
What do you think has been the strangest move that Cleveland have made so far?
Well, I really think it was really strange with the signing and then not signing of Jordan Cameron. So the reports all came out that the Cleveland Browns had signed Jordan Cameron. If you guys had read my write-up of the Cleveland Browns, I mean, I think real fans of Cleveland knew he was gone. He'd been talking about how he didn't like Cleveland. The front office was, you know, he didn't like going through this many offensive coordinators. And to see that they had signed him, and then I think like an hour later that he signed with Miami for the same deal that they had been reported for Cleveland was just kind of laughable. So I think most people knew he wasn't coming back and how frustrated he was with kind of the changing offensive philosophy within the building.
Which is strange. So by all accounts, reports coming today that basically he was in Miami and I think he had a visit and was about to go back to Cleveland potentially. And then news of the Charles Clay offer from the Bills kind of came through and they were like, listen, we need to sign this guy right now. And you know, if it's a choice between Miami with a quarterback in Ryan Tannehill and the weather, obviously, as well, versus Cleveland with no quarterback and, you know, probably fourth out of four in the AFC North, you know, I think it's quite an easy decision for him to make. But he must have just been, like, so frustrating because he's been one of those guys who's been at a Pro Bowl level for you. So it's very disappointing, I guess.
I mean, it was one of our only good draft picks in the past probably 5 years or so.
Oh, I just feel sorry for you, Rob. I can just tell in your voice that it's hurting you quite a lot. And don't worry, this is
fine,
therapy.
It's
therapy. Don't worry. We're here to help as much as we're here to compete.
I'm just hoping that we have another great schedule where we face the NFC South type conference again, so we can end up 7-9 and fool ourselves into thinking that we're a good team.
Yeah, when I said we were the best division of football, I should have caveated that by saying last year we did play the AFC South and the NFC South. So maybe inflated our record somewhat. But I guess, Rex, what's been the strangest move that the Ravens have made so far?
I think it's their lack of getting a tight end right now. Right, like you said, Owen Daniels followed Gary Kubiak to Denver. We have two last year. They were rookies last year, who are basically blocking tight ends, and they have made no moves to get any of the pass-catching veteran tight ends out there, who number one on my list would be Jermaine Gresham. I think it would be taking a weapon away from you guys. And what I keep hearing is that, well, he hasn't fulfilled potential. He's only good for 60 catches a year. 60 catches a year from a tight end? I'll take that. You know? So like I said, the strangest move the Ravens have made is they're not filling Owen Daniels' position right now, because there is not a tight end in this draft that you can count on other than maybe Max Williams.
That's an interesting point. Just on Gresham first, I mean, I don't think fans would cry too much if Jermaine Gresham wasn't at Bengal last year. They may be disappointed if he ended up in Baltimore, because there's every chance they're in a different environment, especially one in Baltimore, where I think John Harbaugh may get the best out of him. I don't think we'd be too upset, but yeah, it doesn't look like it's a great tight end class, but I guess there'll probably be somebody who steps up that we've never heard of for Baltimore, as is always the case. And, you know, I think that'll be something that you may address, but I wonder, in the Trestman offense, is he somebody that is a tight end position somewhere that they obviously use? And I'm thinking back to Chicago and Martellus Bennett. He had some success early doors, but maybe not sustained. So maybe it's not as important as it needs to be for you, but definitely an area of need, sure.
Well, I don't know much about the Trestman offense other than the fact when he came here, he did say that he's going to change as little as possible here from what Gary Kubiak was doing. And he did retain the offensive line coach and whatever offensive coaches that Kubiak did not take with him. So I'm going to take the man at his word and assume that we're going to be running basically what you saw last year, which highlights tight ends and H-backs like Kyle Juszczyk and stuff like that. So I would love to see us get an athletic tight end.
Let's see how that goes. So Greg, I guess finally, what's been the strangest move from a Pittsburgh perspective?
I guess we're going to find out exactly what Keith Butler thinks of outside linebackers. But, I mean, with the Jason Wills retirement and James Harrison not under contract at 37 years old and Jarvis Jones playing like four games last year or something, they have nobody at outside linebacker. I mean, they re-signed Arthur Motes as a good special teams player, but they absolutely have shown no interest in going after a pass rusher of any sort. And, I mean, that's kind of traditionally how what makes the defense go. So, I mean, I don't know where they're going to head, but they definitely need someone to get after Flacco and Dalton and whoever Cleveland has. But, I mean,
I think Dalton, by the way, could... Sorry.
I was really hoping that Sheard might, you know, stay on the market for a couple weeks and come over, but because he did go to Pitt, so I kind of... Well, I'd love to see him on the Steelers, but they just don't care about pass rush, apparently. So,
yeah, not yet. I think one of my best friends is a Steelers fan, and he absolutely thinks outside linebacker is definitely an area of need. And I think he had his eye on one of the guys who in the market, like a Trent Cole, Jason Wills, if he was not going to retire, or Derek Morgan of the Titans. But obviously, we'll have to wait and see what happens there. in the draft as we come up to it. So that's a great segue into our third segment of the show, which is the draft. And as we all know, I think the reason for the success of the teams in this division is because of the draft. And Rob, with two first round picks this year, and I guess uncertainty at the quarterback position and some holes on defense, how would you like to see the Browns attack the draft in April?
Well, if it was me, and they'll probably go different than what I think because they think that they know football, but you know, right up the middle of the defense. I mean, they're 32nd against the run last year, dead last. They've had a lot of kind of people leave up the middle there. And I think, you know, defensive tackle, I'm hoping for somebody like Danny Shelton out of Washington, hopefully to be there with the first pick. I'd look at another inside linebacker because Carlos Dansby is good, not great. And Craig Robertson, I mean, that guy should be working for your local moving company. That guy shouldn't even be in the NFL. So they need to fill in that spot, you know, as well. I think I would just keep going defense in the second round. Maybe look for Paul Dawson, because that's, I think, maybe an inside linebacker at a good value there. He's from TCU. And then, I guess, last, I would say a lot of positions in need here, but wide receiver. So they need some star players in the skill position. So this is a deep draft for wide receivers. So I think that if they don't go for a big name at number 19 with the receiver, they look for them to maybe try and get some value in the back half of the second round or third round.
Yeah, that sounds like good. I think going back to Dawson, the TCU guy, one of the things that I think that Cleveland needs to completely address next year is just character. I think you look at the first round, obviously, we talked about Gilbert, we touched on Manziel. I don't think you can go again and say, listen, this guy's a character concern. Let's give him a chance because of the talent. I think you've just got to be patient, get guys you want to buy into the way that Petty wants to do things and go from there, really, because it's just going to continue to hurt yourself if you get guys you just don't buy into, you know, what you need to make it in the NFL, because that to me has been why our division has been so strong, is that, you know, good character guys who've done really well. And I think, you know, I know you're playing catch up, but for me, it's really an area that is so important. What do you guys think?
I think a lot of times the other three teams, you guys' teams, they go with solid players, where the Browns try and make a splash in the media, especially like with a Manziel or something like that, that it's either destined to just be a huge bust or it just might be okay. I mean, there's no, the upside on a lot of these guys isn't very good. So that's what I worry about as well.
Absolutely. Rex, what do you think about the Browns in the draft this year?
Well, I got to be honest with you. I don't really know what they're going to do. I hope they don't pick a receiver, because that's going to lead into what I want to say. If I can backtrack a second, and this might be something that's going to get me laughed right off this podcast. I have a question for Rob, and I wanted to get to it. You said strangest moves. Josh McCown, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Can someone tell me, and I'm stealing the line from a buddy of mine, how Kyle Bowler can have an 8-year career in this, in the NFL, yet Tim Tebow is still unemployed? Why wouldn't the Browns bring in a Tim Tebow type? If nothing else, he would be a good role model for the quarterback you drafted in the first round last year.
You know, if we hadn't drafted Manziel, I think they might actually look down that well. I think that they're worried about the media hype versus what they're going to get out of a quarterback. I think they want to stay. I mean, anybody that they picked up was going to be an upgrade, right? So I think that they're looking to see the Josh McCown from the Chicago Bears and not the one with Tampa Bay. And I think that they're going to get somebody in the middle of that. You know, the key for McCown was that he stayed on his feet, right? So Chicago was able to keep him away from kind of hurries, and Tampa Bay was not. If you look at how many pass attempts he had versus how many sacks he had, he was lowest in the league. And I mean, he had the highest percentage of times he was hit or sacked, and that led to tons of interceptions. So I think they just want to get somebody who's decent at that position and then really try and upgrade the rest of it around and not pay a lot of money. I mean, that's the only way I can explain it.
Now, because of that, I firmly believe, and I don't know if you touched on it, I don't think the Browns in any round this year are going to take any quarterback. What do you think?
No, I agree. I don't think so either. I mean, they have four. I think that they're waiting for Manziel to get out of rehab and see if he can do anything after that. They sign Thad Lewis, which, you know, scares the hell out of me too. That's a somebody who should be on the garbage heap of every NFL team. And but they're, you know, that's another backup, I think, if Manziel doesn't work. And then they have this Connor Shaw guy who is, he got to play, you know, two games last year because of all the injuries. And I think that they think he's semi-decent. But, yeah, I don't think that they're going to go out on a limb at all. I think they're a little bit gun-shy on that. And after Winston, I really don't have faith in any of the quarterbacks in the draft, at least where I think they're going to be drafted. If somebody like a Hundley, and I went to UCLA, so I'm a little bit of a homer there, but I saw all of his games. If he falls to the back half of the second round or early third, I think that there is a value there. But besides that, I don't think there's anybody else in the draft that's going to be available for them to pick.
Can I interject too here? I don't understand. You know, instead of going with Tebow, you know, you have the Cleveland boy, Brian Hoyer, who won you guys seven games. And with no receivers, and you guys didn't even bring him back just to see if he could do something again. Because in my opinion, I mean, McCown is Brian Hoyer only like 5 years older. So what's the upside?
Yeah.
Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, you could be right. I mean, I don't have it in front of me what Hoyer signed with, what his dollars were for the Texans. But I really think that he, if you watched the Jacksonville game, which we lost, I mean, it was one of the worst quarterback showings I've ever seen in my entire life. And yes, he did win seven games, but I don't think it was because of him. I would think a lot of it was in spite of him. So we went really strong running game this year or last year and then focused on our defense, which, you know, wasn't great against the run, but, you know, our DB is probably one of the top in the league, in top 10 at least, in terms of a unit. So I think that they're looking to maybe do a money ball type situation, and where everybody else is going high on quarterback, they go low and then just try and build up the rest of the team. It's the only thing that I can think of, and I agree with you. I think McCown is a 5 year older version of Hoyer. I just hope that he can be a little bit better.
If I might add into that, I think Hoyer did a great job, because I remember the game obviously on Thursday night where Dalton was abysmal, and Hoyer did a great job of moving you guys down the field. And then when Josh Gordon came back, I felt like the offense got out of a rhythm a little bit, and they kind of went away from that running game like you talked about and tried to stretch the field. And when that wasn't the formula that you guys had. And I felt like that was kind of when we played Manziel in the reverse game, and you know it was one of the worst things I've ever seen from a quarterback. Yeah. I just thought, that steady hand. I think he's a better quarterback than maybe we think, as a result of maybe just what was going on in Cleveland. And I think he's very happy to probably be out of Cleveland. And you never know in a draft if Mariota did fall to 12, is that somebody you would consider, or would you just sort of say, listen, we've got McCown for this year, and potentially Manziel, let's kind of just see how we go on?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Mariota fits the scheme that they're trying to run, but if he's there, you know, I could see them trying to maybe taking a flyer on him at the 19. I don't think at the 12 that they would do it. But then again, I don't think he falls to them at the 19 spot. So, the way that they've run this offseason, I'm as confused as anybody as where they're going to go. I mean, it's really strange.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, I've got a drop for the Cleveland Browns, and it is very, very apt.
We've got to be the dumbest team in America in terms of playing the game.
Not just playing, Bill. Not just playing. Yeah, very apt. I'm apologizing. I'm trying to get my head around these drops, but that felt like it was a good one for the right time. So, Rex, I guess onto the Ravens from a draft perspective, it always seems like you have 1,000 draft picks. And Ozzie and Eric, which sounds like a comedy duo. How do you think those two will address your needs this year? And what are your needs?
Well, we always have a lot of draft picks because Ozzie is a big proponent of again, during the free agency period when everybody's signing all these people, he lets his players go, and we wind up getting, you know, max compensatory picks every year. If I'm not mistaken, over the last four or five drafts, we lead the league in the most compensatory picks. Ozzie always drafts for best player available, regardless of need. If his pick comes up and the best player available is at a position that he has great depth, he trades down. If I were running this, wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver. Enough is enough with this team. 20 years, the Ravens have yet to have a true number one receiver. They've always had good number twos and number threes. They've never had a true number one receiver.
if Jalen Strong is available when the Ravens pick and they do not run up there and draft him, I don't know what I'm going to do. But the need for receiver is so bad this year, I might actually think that Ozzie, with some of these picks that he gets, and again, you can't trade compensatory picks, but with the compensatory picks that makes his normal picks able to trade, I could see him trading up maybe 5-8 picks to try to get a Devontae Parker or something like that. But as far as I'm concerned, if any other player is picked other than a wide receiver in the first round, I'm not sure what they're doing. And now, in the second round, had you asked me about a week and a half ago, I'd say they got to find somebody in the secondary. But with the signing of Kendrick Lewis, who sounds like he might be what we need back there as a ball-hawking safety, I've kind of changed my mind with Terrell Suggs and Elvis Dumervil being 32 and 31 respectively. They really need to find some youth at outside linebacker. So I would look at a guy like Nate Orchard out of Utah or Lorenzo Molden out of Louisville, that both have, you know, in the 6'3", 6'4" range, 250 pounds, and very good pass rushers, questionable holding up on the run. But that's what I'd like to see him go for.
Well, that sounds like I think the draft's done for you guys then, right? I think let's give Ozzie a call. Rex has got it sorted. We're going wide receiver in the first round. We're going outside linebacker in round two. And yeah, it's all done. Absolutely no problems, Rex. Well done. I think it's interesting, though. I think at the end of the first round, you guys picked 26th. And if it's anything like last year and there's a run on wide receivers, it's going to be interesting to see what you guys do. And if there's none of your guys there, do you trade back again to get more picks? You never know. But looking at that pick, yeah, maybe Jalen Strong is available at 26, but he's somebody who I know has caught heat at the right time. And it's quite interesting to sort of see if he does fall to you or not.
Well, I thought for sure last year the Ravens were going to trade out of the first round, and then Ozzie surprised everyone and picked C.J. Mosley, and I slapped my hand against my head saying, oh, not another Alabama player. But it turned out to be an excellent pick. That's why
I think he's
doing what he does, and I do what I do.
Rex, let's not write you off just yet. You had a good start. I think there's a lot of potential with you as a personnel guy, so let's not get too negative too soon. I do think, I'm not sure if anyone ever remembers this, but Ozzie famously said about 2 or 3 years ago that T.J. Yeldon, who's the running back coming out this year from Alabama, was better than both Eddie Lacy and Trent Richardson, which in hindsight isn't, you know, I think I'm better at running back than Trent Richardson, but still.
Don't tell the Raiders.
I think he's a guy to watch out for. So if we're going to look back at his podcast in, 6 weeks, 7 weeks time, I'm going to go on a limb and say in maybe round two or round one that T.J. Yeldon is the pick there, because I do think even though Forsett signed a new 3-year deal, it's only a 1-year deal essentially, and I think running back is something that they need. Obviously, after today's news of the release of Bernard Pierce, who just had a terrible last year in Baltimore.
Yeah, but I really don't see them picking a running back in either the first 2 days of the draft. I got an update that said they brought in Melvin Gordon for a talk. I think that's a smokescreen right there. There's no way he's going to spend a first-round pick on running back. It's not going to happen. Forsett is a perfect example. You don't need, in today's NFL, there's maybe half dozen running backs and then everyone else. If you got the offensive line, a decent running back can do what they need to do.
Yeah. Rex, I totally agree. But the question I have for you is, do you think that they would look at somebody like a Devin Funchess, who can be, he's kind of a tight end wide receiver hybrid, maybe in like a Jimmy Graham type role? I mean, that kind of satisfies two of your needs. You talked about how they haven't signed a tight end, but if he's available.
I watch a lot of college football. I do not watch any Michigan because I think their uniforms are so beautiful, I can't look directly at them. So from what I understand, he ran pretty slow, even for a guy his size at the combine. I think that now he's projected to be out of the first round completely. Is that so?
Yeah, I've seen that as well. But I mean, you know, with your like pick at 58, if he's still there, I think that's kind of an interesting pick.
Well, I could see that in the second or third round. I could definitely see them trying to get a tight end, especially if, again, they don't sign some veteran during free agency.
Yeah.
And if you think about Trestman as well with the Bears, obviously he had great success with Jeffrey and also Brandon Marshall. I don't think speed in the NFL, especially for receivers, has proven to be, you know, that important. I know it's important to be quick and have that twitchiness, but if you can get open and you can make contested catches, then potentially you've got a role in the NFL. So maybe that's somebody who they look at. And moving on to I'd say the Steelers, Greg. For me, the Steelers are always named as a team that kind of nailed the draft, but I think there's been a lot of misses as much as hits for you guys recently. What do you reckon are the areas of need for you guys?
You're right. Recently, they haven't been doing great in the middle rounds, but and all their misses in the draft is where they need to go this year. They have to go outside linebacker. I mean, they have to go outside linebacker in the first round. If they don't get a pass rusher, I mean, how am I going to be able to watch them? They're, you know, the Dolphins have all day to throw. But, yeah, I think after the first round, they go outside linebacker first round, then I think they go next six picks defensive backs because they absolutely have nobody back there. I mean, next couple days I expect Paul Malu to be retired / released. And if they don't end up filling their depth chart at in the secondary, they're going to be hurting bad. So that's all three needs right there.
Job done.
Yeah, Greg, Greg, you're in the position that my Ravens are. I mean, we were blessed to have Rod Woodson playing free safety, and then after he retired, we drafted Ed Reed. He manned it back there for 10 years. Now we're finding out what life is like not having a superior center fielder back there, and I'm not liking it.
Yeah, that's the truth. And Rod Woodson playing for the Ravens is one of my most heated things I've ever had to see in my life. I could not love that guy more growing up, and golly, seeing him in purple is awful. But I mean, I didn't think we'd miss Ryan Clark last year at all, because I thought his time had passed, but watching Mike Mitchell back there is very painful. So
interesting. Mike Mitchell was probably responsible for my least favorite moment of last season when he knocked AJ Green unconscious in the week 17 game. He then fumbled. You guys got the ball back and won the game, and we got beat in the first round of the playoffs yet again. So Mike has some good memories for you guys. I guess for me, for the Steelers, I think it's a 16-year gap from the last time you took a cornerback in the first round. And to your point, yeah, defensive back is definitely an area that is of huge need. So maybe there's one of those guys in the first round that's got drops to you. I'm trying to think of some names here, but the kid out of Washington, the cornerback, his name
Jalen
is
Collins,
hold on.
At LSU.
Jalen Collins LSU. It's Marcus Peters at Washington. You got Trey Waynes at Michigan State up the top there. Another guy who's sort of ranked highly is Kevin Johnson out of Wake Forest. So potentially, yeah, you go with cornerback in that regard.
Secondary guys in the first round, watching what the Browns had to go through last year and also what the Ravens had to go through with Jimmy Smith just terrifies me. You know, use that top pick on a guy like that and then you have to wait forever for him to develop or never to develop. I mean, we already have that going on with some guys on the roster, so I almost like throwing a ton of picks at the position just to see if one sticks.
And you can never go wrong with the guys out of LSU, Patrick Peterson, you know, Honey Badger. So I really like Jalen Collins in your position there at 22.
Yeah, I think it's a really good thing. I think if you look at the Bengals sort of blueprint recently, you know, we've had a number of first rounders back there and we've allowed them to sort of sit and way behind, you know, veteran players. And I guess that's where you've missed out, is that you've not had those guys who can step in or can redshirt essentially behind some veterans now that Taylor is going to move on. And obviously Cortez Allen moved on previously. So yeah, maybe that's an area where you go heavy, not just once, but maybe two or three times in the draft. That takes me back onto the Bengals, I guess. And I look at our needs on both lines, really. I think defensive tackle, we have, we've offered Devin Still a contract, but he's just not fulfilled his potential. Great news, by the way, from Devin Still yesterday was that there's potential that his daughter, Leah, is now cancer-free, potentially. So fingers crossed on that one. But from also defensive tackle, D'Amato Pecco, who's been around for, I think, 8 seasons now, he's he's getting no younger. You know, he's a leader on the team, but I think his play isn't it as good as it is as his contract. So maybe there's a potential for us to look there. But also, offensive tackle next year, Andrew Whitworth and Andre Smith, their contracts expire after next season. So I think it might be a situation where if one of the big tackles sort of drops, maybe a Lael Collins from LSU, then we look there as sort of maybe another red shirt and let those guys develop behind the scenes whilst we roll with the starters for one more year. So I also think if you look at the way we ended the season with basically no receivers to throw to in that playoff game, I think that's the potential. And I know that they're looking at that because even though Marvin Jones is expected to be back and Tyler Eifert also, you know, their injury record, you know, is quite prominent now. So maybe a receiver is somewhere that we go and fingers crossed we can address that in the draft. What do you guys think about the Bengals?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think those are good picks. I mean, I think that this the offensive line is pretty deep at the back half of the first round there with somebody like a TJ Cummings or even Andres Pete from Stanford. And then receiver, again, I think that's another deep one. I think you can wait to the back half of the second round for that. And I think that those will shore up a lot of your needs.
And we do another great job of the draft, which is becoming the Bengals way. Who would have thought it 10 years ago? Okay, so the draft is kind of, I think we all feel good about where our teams need to go. But I guess, you know, one of the best things about the offseason, and we touched upon it, is the fact that you can develop your own guys and there are going to be players that A, need to step up, and B, players that we might not have heard of that basically are going to, we hope, can step up. So let's take the time now, I guess, to discuss those. I guess from Greg, your perspective, what player needs to step up or do you think will step up as we go into the 2015 season?
I really love the wide receiver on the other side of Antonio Brown, that Marcus Wheaton they have. Early in the season, he looked tremendous. He has such body control. I just expect him to see one-on-one coverage this year, kind of being overshadowed by that rookie, Bryant. And really, I think he's really going to be the key to success of the offense moving forward, especially on third downs, because I just think he has all the makings of a complete receiver. I mean, he's a little small, but he has a great leaping ability, great body control, and he is very quick. And unlike Bryant, he can actually run more than just straight down the field. So I really am looking forward to seeing him in his third year.
Sounds like a great sort of, if you get him into the mix as well, and obviously Bryant is probably pretty one-dimensional, but if he can develop too, that's a really, really strong receiver core, and it caused us so many problems last year. So yeah, if that happens, I think that offense continues to be very, very successful. Rob, what about you? What player do you want to sort of step up next season?
Well, you know, in the write-up that we had, I put Josh McCown, but since we already talked about him, I'd like to mentioned the other guy, I think, is Brian Hartline. You know, the signing of him was kind of unheralded in terms of, you know, he's not a big name receiver, but I think that he's a good possession receiver for us, and somebody that we can get to move across the middle of the field in a, like a Wes Welker type role. And so hoping that can take some pressure off McCown with, you know, some of the hot reads and things like that. And if he can step up, I think that'll really help the offense.
Yeah, absolutely. Rex, what about you? What's the one player for the Ravens you want to see step up next season?
Oh, that'll be Tim Jernigan. He played very well as a rookie last year, especially after not a miss the last four games of the season. And this year, he's gonna really do well. He has such a quick first step. Not his best year was 5.5 sacks. That was like the 2010 season. I see Tim Jernigan easily getting six or more sacks this year. He's going to give us the best interior defensive line push we've had since Sam Adams was manning it back in 2000-2001.
Interesting point. I think, yeah, he was somebody who really did well in the back end of the season. So if he can step up even further, that'd be another great pick. It seemed like last year you really nailed the draft. So for me, yeah, let's watch out for him as we go forward. From a Bengals perspective, I think it'd be easy for me to say Darquez Denard, but I think Terrence Newman probably isn't going to be back. And I think, you know, Denard showed flashes last year when he got some game time. And I'd like to see him and Drake Kirkpatrick, you know, really take the starting reins as, you know, in their grasp. So that's, I hope for that. And also two guys that, you know, before Sunday really needed to step up, but maybe less so now that Johnson signed, are and Margus Hunt and Will Clark. Now, Margus coming out is an athlete, basically. I haven't seen much from him to sort of say he's going to be a good player. And Will Clark fits the kind of Bengals mold, but again, he played limited snaps last year. So let's kind of see how those two guys develop in the wake of the Johnson re-signing. But I think basically the Bengals have a kind of an open plate for all the players to sort of take an opportunity to get more game time and help us to finally win a playoff game, which is kind of have to be the focus for next season. So guys, that's kind of our show in the books almost. It's been very, very enjoyable, especially for our first podcast. Me hosting, it's not been as smooth as I'd like, but I hope you've enjoyed it. Have you all enjoyed it?
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks for putting this together.
Absolutely.
It's been lovely to chat with what is it pod calls us, above average fans. And I think really this division is primed to be very competitive once more. I think I hope Cleveland do turn it around. It'd be nice to have, you know, four teams fighting for it again at the end of the season. But yeah, gents, I guess it's the time now to plug the show. On Saturday, Pod will be back with more super fans to chat. So please follow our account at NFU Podcast for news of when that will drop. We're hoping to get into iTunes very, very soon. So please, in the meantime, follow the links, share the podcast on your own channels, and hopefully we can grow this thing bit by bit. So it's goodbye from Greg.
Adios, amigos.
It's goodbye from Rob.
And aloha means goodbye.
Nice. It's goodbye from Rex.
Good night, Simon.
Good night, Rex. And it's goodbye from me, English Simon. See you later. And as Pod would say, there you have it.
All right,
guys, that was it. Yeah, that's it. We'll have a little follow up wrap. I'll end the episode and I'll cut it out and then I'll share it on Twitter, but I'll also put it on the is it Slack? What's it called? Slack?
Yeah. Slack.
Yeah. Whatever it's called. I really do enjoy that, by the way. But then yeah, hopefully we can share it out and we can get more people listening to us.
Yeah, thank you for putting it together. It's been great.
Yeah, thanks for staying until midnight or 1 a.m.
It's half 12 now. It's half 12 now. But I've honestly, guys, thank you so much. It's not. It's been so nerve wracking, but I've really enjoyed it. You guys helped out so much. So I appreciate that. So cheers.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. It was nice talking to you and meeting you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You too, Rex.
Ditto. All right. See you guys.
Good night. Good night.